Welcome to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, first Friday, September 5th, 2014. Scott Burton, your host today, in for Mr. Pat Moore. On our show today, we'll get our regular update on activities at UAS from Katie Bosler and hear about this season's evening at Egan lineup. Beth Weigel will be here to tell us about what's going on in Juno's libraries. We'll take a quick look at KTOO's first Friday art guide. And we'll learn more about the Wilderness Act as we celebrate its 50th anniversary with Forest Service Wilderness Manager Kevin Hood and Juneau District Ranger Brad Orr. That Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, Music, and more right here on a Juneau Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Plaintiffs in a voting rights lawsuit are reacting to news that a federal judge has ruled in their favor. KYUK's Daisha Eaton has more.
Judge Sharon Gleason found the state of Alaska violated the Voting Rights Act by failing to provide translations of voting materials to voters whose primary language is Gwich'in or Yupik. Benjamin Nakusik is the tribal chief for the native village of Hooper Bay, a plaintiff in the case.
I was very pleased because the elders of the YK Delta want to know what they're voting on and who they're voting for and why, and our elders by nature are very articulate and precise in what they want.
Judge Gleason issued the partial decision after presiding over a two-week trial in June and July. Native American Rights Fund attorneys argued the state's voting materials in Yupik and Gwich'in were inaccurately translated and poorly distributed. NARF attorney Natalie Landreth says the law the state was supposed to be following passed in 1975. Judge Gleason gave the state until Friday to indicate what changes they can make before the November 4th general election. Landreth says she hopes the state will deliver comprehensive translations.
There's a 100-page voter information pamphlet that goes out every election in English. We want to see is some plan to make sure that Yupik-speaking voters will learn about the candidates, the ballot measures, the bond measures, the judges, everything on there.
The Department of Law has said it will work with the Division of Elections to draft a proposal. Judge Gleason has not yet ruled on whether the state intentionally violated voters' rights on the basis of race or color. In Bethel, I'm Daisha Eaton.
As the professional football season begins, Native groups are trying to pressure broadcasters to stop using the name of the Washington football team. Matt Laszlo reports.
The battle over changing the team name for the football team in the nation's capital reached a new milestone as a coalition of more than 100 Native American and social justice groups sent a letter to broadcasters urging them to stop using the name on public airwaves. The statement, led by the Oneida Indian Nation and the National Congress of American Indians, says the name is a dictionary-defined racial slur, and using it on air constitutes an endorsement of the team. The coalition also expressed hopes that networks will take a cue from CBS Sports anchor James Brown's announcement last week that he thinks the team should change its name. The letter also references the chairman of CBS Sports, who recently said the network will not force its broadcasters to use the term. Team owner Dan Schneider has refused to change the name, saying it honors Native Americans. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Two Canadian cabinet ministers say the government is open to a roundtable on the issue of missing and murdered Aboriginal women. Native leaders are calling for a national investigation. Dan Karpinchuk has details.
The issue isn't going away. In fact, it's taken on even more significance. In Winnipeg, protesters have camped outside the Manitoba legislature for days. They, too, are calling for a public inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women. A Royal Canadian Mounted Police report in May estimated that about 1,200 Aboriginal women have been missing or murdered over the past three decades. But Prime Minister Stephen Harper has refused to heed the calls for an inquiry. Now his government has moved, albeit slightly. Aboriginal Affairs Minister Bernard Valcourt opened the door to the idea of a roundtable, but with conditions.
There is a solid plan by the provinces and those First Nations to join us into taking action, yes indeed. But we will need to see a clear sign that they are ready to act and stop calling for a national inquiry.
Some provincial and First Nations leaders are welcoming the move, saying it's a small first step. They say only a public inquiry can really examine the issues and then make recommendations for change. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the National Indian Education Association, an inclusive Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. Membership registration available at NIEA.org.
Our democracy is a government of the people, for the people. Let's keep it that way. Vote on November 4th. Get registered, cast your vote. It's that simple. More information at nativenews.net. Brought to you by the Carnegie Corporation of New York and Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
The University of Alaska Southeast is pleased to announce the first presenter for the Fall 2014 Evening at Egan Lecture Friday Night Series. Thai activist Sulak Sivaraksa presents The Wisdom of Sustainability, Consumerism, Capitalism, and Climate Change. Sivaraksa is an advocate for social, environmental, and political justice around the world. Friday, September 5th, 7 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, free and open to the public.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, first Friday, September 5th, 2014. With the studio in me, with me now is Katie Bosler. Welcome, Katie.
Hey, Scott. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Well, I am just running, you know. Like you said, it's the first Friday of our fall semester.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing about working in academia is it you remember going to college, right? How it was this really intense.
Right.
You know, at the start and end of every semester.
Right, because you don't do anything in the middle.
Not really. Not at all. And the summer, you know, even though you have just as much to do as a staff member, you just sort of slow down a little bit. And sometimes it's just, whoa.
Boom, go time.
Exactly. And it's really go time for Evening at Egan, because we generally don't have an Evening at Egan at the first Friday of September, but we do this year thanks to the Juno World Affairs Council, who is bringing us Sulak Sivaraksa, who you just heard the promo about there from Christy. Now, he did speak for a Juno World Affairs Council event here at the station this week.
Yeah, it was really well attended.
Yeah. Fascinating guy. He's an intellectual and author and activist from Thailand. And his talk tonight is going to be titled The Wisdom of Sustainability, Consumerism, Capitalism, and Climate Change. And I think what he's getting at here is, you know, we're kind of run by corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Some people see it that way.
Right.
And, you know, how this is sort of leading or brought us maybe to this place where we are with climate change. There's more details about that in a really interesting article that Melissa Griffiths did in The Empire this week, where she did a pretty extensive interview with him where he talks about, you know, his beliefs about the, if you will, sometimes illusion of democracy and corporations and you know, where we're at as a planet and a global society and what we can do to try to make changes. So he's going to talk about that kind of stuff tonight. He's quite the decorated activist, advocate for social, environmental, and political justice. He's won the Nobel Peace Prize, actually been nominated, twice. He's been awarded the Swedish Right Livelihood Award, the India's Millennium Gandhi Award, and the Nawano Peace Prize in Japan. So he also has a book called The Wisdom of Sustainability. I don't know if that's been floating around here at all.
I think so.
Yeah.
And nuts and bolts-wise, on Evening at Egan, it's on Friday nights. It's free.
Right.
It's at the university.
Yes.
It's either in the library or the lecture hall, right? Does
correct.
It bounce back and forth?
Correct. Yeah. For those who are just new to, what the heck are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Well, the Evening at Egan series is a fall lecture series, a real tradition here in the capital city now, been going on for more than a decade, a number of years. So this
great
is something
series.
That, yes.
I'm wondering, do you happen to know how many years? I'm trying to think. It, long time.
I should know. I think it's
sorry
been,
to put you on the spot.
I know. I'll have that for you next time. But
okay.
I think it's more than 10, but less than 15 is my guess. But, yeah, this is a free lecture series to anyone who wants to come out to the university every Friday night from September through a good part of November, 7 o'clock, and the events always take place either at our Egan Lecture Hall or at the library. So tonight's event will be at the Lecture Hall. But
they're free.
The way. Yes, free to the public and anyone
great.
Who wants to come. Yeah,
I've learned a lot by going to those lectures.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a nice, I guess you'd say, sort of de facto continuing education. You know, there's no credits or anything, but well, if you're a UAS student, you just might get extra credit from your teacher if they've designated that.
If any of my students are listening right now, if you go, you can have extra credit. I forgot to tell you on Tuesday.
Oh yes, I forgot. You know. Yeah, Scott is one of those Renaissance people here in Juneau. He is also an English faculty, adjunct faculty at the university,
mm-hmm.
right?
I am. I love it. It's a great job.
That's awesome. Well, I will let you know that next week's, I'm going to give you kind of an overview now. Do we have a few minutes just of the season?
Yeah.
It's
mm-hmm.
pretty exciting. We have really awesome season lined up. So next Friday, the 12th of September, we're going to have Richard Nelson from Sitka, the author, mm-hmm. authors, and Hank Lentfer. They've been doing a project for the last couple of years called Voices of Glacier Bay. The title of their talk is Listening Through the Art of Recording. So what's really cool is they've gone into the forest, meadows, waters of Glacier Bay National Park, and they have this very high-end recording equipment.
Yeah.
Have you heard any of these sounds?
I haven't heard the sounds, but
they're incredible.
I can't wait because I ran into Hank and Gustavus spring, and he told me about this project.
Mm-hmm.
He says it's changed his life. It changes how he listens to the world because that equipment, it goes beyond what we can hear as humans. And he says the stuff that's going on out there will blow your mind.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this one.
Yeah, the last one that he just posted online through SoundCloud was a sound of a wolf.
Uh-huh.
And this was a wolf early morning. I'd like to say howling, but it sounded like it was playing a flute. That's the kind of sound it was making. It was just haunting.
What the animals really do when we can't see them.
yeah. And, of course, both Richard, you know, who wrote The Island Within, which is really sort of an iconic nature writing of Southeast Alaska, and then Hank, who's written The Faith of Cranes. Hank has written a lot about this project for Orion Magazine and online, so I would definitely check that out if you can, folks. It's going to be a great talk.
September 12th.
At the library, the 12th, yeah. So then the 19th, another great evening with another couple of fantastic writers, Sherry Simpson and Ernestine Hayes. They will be giving a talk called Cross Currents, Learning to Listen, Listening to Learn, Cultural Appropriation in Alaskan Writing. And this is a discussion about what the dominant culture needs to know before writing about Alaska Native people or history, culture, art. So this should be quite a provocative, I imagine, evening, yes. And very helpful for a lot of us.
Yes.
September 26th, another great one, Dr. Tom Thornton will be here from England. He, of course, has written the book of Tlingit Place Names. He'll be giving a talk called Raven Rocks and the Anthropocene, the Bird's Eye View of Future Earth. So that's a look at the North Pacific indigenous landscapes and their narratives, how to understand that. The stories of Raven, it's going to be quite a talk, and I'm sure it's going to be also very provocative, also at the Egan Library. The 3rd of October, Steve Langdon will be here from University of Alaska, Anchorage, The Tlingit Relationship with Salmon, Implications of Spirituality and Materiality for Sustainability and Productivity. So that's about these kinds of themes that reverberate through the Tlingit existence through the ages. On the 10th of October, another great one. We have, you know, this One Campus, One Book annual event now where everybody on campus, staff, students, faculty is welcome to read a book. And the one chosen this year is The Log from the Sea of Cortez. That is the classic by scientist Ed Ricketts and writer John Steinbeck, yes, of The Grapes of Wrath. They spent some time in the Gulf of California and the Sea of Cortez many years ago. And they did this sort of seminal text of this area.
Yeah.
And so that the author of a book about their collaboration named Katie Roger will be giving the talk. This will also be at the Egan Library on the 10th.
Again, if any of my students are listening, don't forget to read the introduction in Chapter 1 for your homework points.
So helpful to multitask, isn't it?
It's nice.
On the 17th of October, this will be something from the Empty Chair Project. They are going to be bringing us Living Voices, which is a Seattle arts group who will be presenting the story of a teenager's internment experience, and this will also integrate archival film. So that should be a fascinating presentation.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be at the lecture hall. On the 24th, the Juno World Affairs Council is doing a forum on Mexico. They will have an excellent kickoff presenter. This forum, the 3-day conference goes from the 23rd to the 25th, but the evening Egan event will be, of course, as always, Friday, 7 p.m. lecture hall. And the World Affairs Council has yet to officially announce who that speaker will be, so we'll keep you posted. We're getting there, folks. On Halloween, Robin Waltz, our professor of history, and I think the rest of these are all our professors, are giving talks between Halloween and the 21st of November. And those include a talk by Robin Walls on the, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Borg, the Ecological Imperative in the Age of Cybernetic Organisms. I'll let you go to the web to read the rest of that. If you go to just uas.alaska.edu, go to the Juno page and click on Evening at Egan, you can see the descriptions of all these events. Aaron
Dr.
Hood
Walls
on the 7th of November. Pardon?
I was just going to say Dr. Walls has a great way of explaining to that,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah.
He's really fun to listen to.
He is. And also has a great way of presenting and explaining complex things for a general audience is Aaron Hood,
mm-hmm.
who is our environmental science professor. And he's going to give, I think, a talk will be of interest, especially that time of year, November 7th. This is about how our snow may be affected by climate change locally. So I think there'll be some snow sliders will be interested in that talk especially. And Sam Stack, our accounting professor, will be speaking about the world of personal finance, which I'm sure a lot of us could use that, the 14th of November. And finally, on the 21st, seems so far away, another great talk. This will be kind of the second in a series, A Year of Rethinking Racism in Juno, Reflection of Discussion and Discussion. That'll be with Dr. Saul Neely, Huni, Lance Twitchell, our head of our Alaska Native Languages program, and Colleen James, who runs our Native and Rural Student Center. So, folks, a lot happening for Evening Egan. I got
great
through that.
Season
the next
up,
couple
Katie.
Of months. Yeah, we're very excited. It was a really collaborative committee that got this whole thing together. We want to thank our provost, Rick Crawfield, for really spearheading a lot of this year. And if you want to get more information, just go to uas.alaska.edu/Juno, click on that Evening at Egan icon, and you can read all about it.
In Katie's words, continuing education for the community of Juno.
Well, lifelong learning.
Lifelong learners, and I think a lot of our listeners are.
Yes.
Katie, thank you so much for sharing that with us today.
Thank you, Scott.
Anything else you want to talk about on the UAS side of things?
Well, just for those who are affiliated with the student housing, last night we did have a great KRNN Spotlight Series kickoff, speaking of different roles we play in the community.
So fun.
I had my MC hat on last night for that with John Elliott and Irene Muller. And John Elliott's folks, one of the best singer-songwriters in the country, he'll be singing and entertaining students at the brand-new Freshman Residence Hall tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Did you talk him into that on stage? I think I was outside. did you have that planned already?
That was already arranged.
Oh, okay.
He did play at the UAS Rec Center when he was here last.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, and there's actually a student worker in the Rec Center who remembered him and said, oh, okay, I can't wait. So it should be a good show for UAS students who are listening.
Those students are in for a treat.
Yeah.
Go listen to this guy. He is smart and funny and a great singer. He's got it all.
And storyteller.
We got a great recording of that show, by the way, which we're going to broadcast on KRNN later.
Fantastic.
Our sister station. But that was a great night. Thanks for doing that, Katie. And that's this next concert, you say, is on Saturday night at the hall.
At the Freshman Rec, the new Freshman Residence Hall on campus in the Commons area. And it's a really good space for kind of an intimate show.
And are folks from around the community invited, or is this just for students?
It's pretty much students.
Okay.
It's a student thing, yeah.
All right. Well, Katie, from UAS, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Don't know how far I'm going to get tonight. 49 keep on talking. Some roads are made for driving fast, and some roads are made for walking. Some roads are made to ease my mind. 49 keep on talking. Me and her, we called it love. What the hell did it matter? But when the pushing came to shove, I didn't have much to say. Yes, I'm better off on my own. No, she won't hear me knocking. This westbound lane gonna be my home. 49, keep on talking. Driving fast. Some roads are made for walking. Some roads are made to ease my mind. 49, keep on talking.
Way to ensure your student succeeds? Visit the Juneau Public Library and sign up for the most important school supply of all, a library card. A library card gives access to ebooks, online homework help, and other tools they'll need to succeed. September is Library Card Sign-Up Month, brought to you by the American Library Association's campaign for America's Libraries and the Friends of the Juneau Public Library. Visit juneau.org/library or find us on Facebook.
Well, thank you, Beth Weigel. And now with me right here in the studio is Juneau Public Library Program Coordinator Beth Weigel to tell us about what's going on in Juneau's libraries.
As you heard, September is Library Card Sign-Up Month.
Nice.
And that song will now be in your head all day.
Yeah.
Thanks. You're welcome.
Thank you, Beth.
Yeah, so it's a great time to come by the library. You know, we're all snuggling in for fall here, and everybody needs to get their books and start just, you know, getting ready for that dark time of the year when we just snuggle in and read.
But absolutely.
We also got some great programs, and that's another great reason to come to the library in the month of September. And we are back doing all our story times and toddler times, and also for the month of September, you know, the museum who's joined up with the library now, we're all part of the same city government, I guess. They do their history time as well. So those are ongoing things that happen throughout the month. But some of the special programs we have this month, next week, Hearts of the Dulcimer is coming up.
Oh, yeah, with Mark Wheeler?
Mark, who works at the library.
Yeah, Mark. Mm-hmm.
And he's put together this little evening. We'll watch and screen the video, Hearts of the Dulcimer, which is a great feature-length documentary. It's about how the mountain dulcimer was born in the 70s in California and its impact. And people are encouraged, if you've got your dulcimers tucked away, to bring them over to Douglas. And we'll have a little viewing of the movie and then, you know, jam on the dulcimers, I guess.
Cool.
So that's happening next week on Thursday the 11th. All throughout the city on the Saturday the 13th is the CBJ Day of Play, and the library is part of that. At the Valley Library, we'll set up our labyrinth in the meeting room, and we'll have some cool story paths to follow around in the library and, you know, just make it a fun time to learn a little bit more about where you find things in the nonfiction section. So that'll be fun. So come out between 1:30 and 4:30 to the Valley Library on Saturday the 13th, and you can participate in the Day of Play. And then the following Saturday on the 20th of September, we're going to be up at Eagle Crest, and it's Discover Eagle Crest Day, and we'll have similar activities, story time, kind of on demand there in the lodge. We'll pull out all the good winter snow books and start doing our snow dances. And we'll also have our story paths set up outside, so you can follow the story paths around outside. There are these pretty cool signs that you'd follow a story. So, for example, one of them is going on a bear hunt, right? So you go to the first sign, and you're going on a bear hunt, and, oh, we're not scared. And then you go, and, of course, there's something, you know, you have to get through, like the pond or something or the field of grass. And so you can do all that motion and have fun with the story out in the outside. So, and then there's also one about going, following a salmon stream, and it'll be a great time. So those are two fun events, and then we've also got an author visit with Sherry Simpson. I think you're probably familiar with her work, right?
I am. She was my mentor when I was getting my master's degree.
Yeah, so she's coming to town, and she'll be talking about her new book, The Unseen Bear, at the Douglas Library on the 21st of the month, and that'll be at 3 o'clock, and that should be a fun time. She's also here with 49 Writers, and she'll have a workshop the day before, so there's lots to do with
that
her.
That is a massive work that she put together.
Yeah, so it's going to be great. She's one of my all-time favorites as well. So she's excellent Alaskan author. And, of course, back to school means parents also are looking for resources for kids to help them with their homework and things like that. So we've got a back-to-school resource for parents at the Valley Library on the 25th. And we're going to just end the month with a boom or a something scientifically spectacular. We're teaming up with the Museum of Light again in Seattle, and we're going to video conference with them. This will be on a Friday, like our we call them our Science Fridays.
Nice.
And so the 26th, and it's going to be what we call the Rocket Launch Science Friday. So we'll learn a little bit about rocketry and how rockets are launched, and video conference with the Museum of Light. This is going to be at the downtown library, and then we're going to go outside, and we're going to launch some stuff. So
that sounds like fun.
If you're familiar with the egg drop exercise, this is similar, where you're you know, building a little something to protect your egg, but we're going to launch them instead of just drop them. Yeah.
Wow.
So
the library's changing, doing some exciting stuff. I haven't heard about launching stuff from libraries before.
Yeah, it's going to be great. So, and that program, the Science Friday programs that we've been doing in the summer, and now this one is best suited for sort of the teens and tweens, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, somewhere in that range. And it's pretty fun stuff. So,
great. And so, Beth, you plan a lot of this stuff, and you also participate, and I know you do a lot of readings. What are a couple of your favorites of some of these programs that you guys have?
Well, I've been having a lot of fun with the Science Fridays because that's a little bit of my background.
Yeah.
You know, I listen to the actual NPR program, Science Friday, and then I draw on that sometimes. Like this morning, they were talking about building squishy circuits. Right?
Oh, yeah, with Play-Doh.
Yeah.
That
so
was so interesting.
I just came from a conference in Montana, a library conference, and that's sort of the new thing, like having maker spaces in libraries and coming up with these sort of hands-on maker-type programs. And so, you know, I think we're looking into some of those things, particularly once the new libraries open out in the Valley, having a space that's dedicated a little bit more to those kind of programs. So you know, I'm still really loving to do lots of the hands-on kinds of things incorporating, you know, whatever the theme might be and bringing out the resources that go with it, the books, right? Other things, and then just having them actually physically, like, figure things out.
Sure.
Yeah.
It seems like it might be sort of a challenging yet very exciting time to be in the library sciences.
I think it is, because I think, you know, libraries are going to, you know, surprise you, I think, in the future here. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned at the conference was that, you know, the idea of a collection isn't just about books anymore. You know, what people have in their collections can range now from sort of building a collection of experiences that you might check out, you know, where you get your backpack with your binoculars and your books and your guides and you check that out from the library and you head out.
Kind of a holistic sort of experience.
Right, yeah. Or a program to go kind of, you know, notion.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think Anchorage has experimented with having sort of these boxes for young children, particularly, you know, these tubs of all the little Lapsit books for mommies, you know, and their kids, and they have some toys in them and things like that. So having a varied kind of a collection, I think, is where libraries are, one of the ways libraries are changing.
Yeah, exciting stuff. Beth, where's the best place to go if people want to review all the stuff you talked about today?
Well, you can always check our website at juno.org/library, and we also have a Facebook page, or you can give us a call at any of the branches. And I did also want to mention we are part of Juno Votes, and I think we're going to hear more about this next week from the director, but you can check out the candidate forum on September 17th at the Egan Library at noon. It's going to be the assembly member and school board folks that are running. So
great coalition there with the Juno Votes.
Yeah, right. So.
All right, Beth Weigel, Program Coordinator of Juno Public Libraries, the voice of the library, if you will.
Exactly.
Thanks for your time
today.
And
don't forget to come in and get your library card this month.
Oh, that's right. September Library Card Month.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Beth.
Have a great day.
You too.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 5th of September, 2014. It was on this day, 1957, Jack Kerouac's On the Road was published. A rather true story of a cross-country hitchhiking trip that Kerouac and his friend Neil Cassady took in the late 1940s. Jack Kerouac encouraged the legend that the book was written in a 3-week writing frenzy. Actually, it had been in the works for many years, though he did sit down and write a first draft in about 3 weeks, listening to a jazz station, drinking coffee. He was a fast typist, Jack Kerouac. He could type 100 words a minute, and it annoyed him to have to load a new page all the time, so he typed onto a roll of paper, 120 inches long, in which Kerouac wrote, "Once there was Louis Armstrong blowing his beautiful top in the muds of New Orleans, before him the mad musicians who had paraded on official days and broke up their Sousa marches into ragtime. Then there was Swing and Roy Eldridge, vigorous and virile, blasting the horn for everything it had in waves of power and logic and subtlety." It's the birthday of the avant-garde composer and humorist John Cage, born in Los Angeles, 1912, wrote music to be played on flower pots and hoods of old cars. His piece Water Music required a piano, a radio, whistles, water containers, and a deck of cards. Best known for his piece 4 minutes, 33 seconds, in which the performer is instructed to sit silently at a piano for 4 minutes, 33 seconds to draw attention to all the sounds made by the audience. And it's the birthday of the novelist Ward Just, Michigan City, Indiana, 1935. A newspaper man served in Vietnam, turned to writing fiction, his most recent American Romantic, story of a Foreign Service officer, Harry Sanders, stationed in Saigon, sent on a secret mission which goes wrong and stays with him for the rest of his life. Here's a poem for today by Kim Dower, Bottled Water. I go to the corner liquor store for a bottle of water, middle of a hectic day, must get out of the office, stop making decisions, quit obsessing, does my blue skirt clash with my hot pink flats, should I get my mother a caregiver or just put her in a home, and I pull open the glass refrigerator door, am confused by brands, Arrowhead, Glitter, Geyser, Deer Park, Spring, Summer, Winter Water, and clearly the bosses of bottled water, real water and smart water. How different will they taste? If I drink smart water, will I raise my IQ but be less authentic? If I choose real water, will I no longer deny the truth, but will I attract confused, needy people who will take advantage of my realness by dumping their problems on me, and will I be too stupid to help them sort through their murky dilemmas? I take no chances. Buy them both. Sparkling, smart, purified, real. Drain both bottles. Look around to see, is anyone watching? I'm now brilliantly hydrated, both real and smart. My insides bubble with compassion and intelligence as I walk the streets with a new swagger, knowing the world is mine. Bottled Water, a poem by Kim Dower from Slice of Moon, published by Red Hen Press, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to, thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Sarah Radke Brown inviting you to join the Juno Symphony on Saturday, September 6th, and feast your eyes, ears, and taste buds during the Symphony's Wildlife Cruise. With hors d'oeuvres, wine tasting, and live music provided by your favorite symphony musicians, it's a real treat. Even the whales have been known to dance to the music. Tickets and more information at junosymphony.org, sponsored by Al Marine Tours and Specialty Imports. This message brought to you by the Juno Symphony.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on First Friday, September 5th, 2014. Scott Burton hosting today in for Pat Moore. With me now in the studio is Forest Service Wilderness Manager Kevin Hood. Welcome, Kevin.
Hey, good to be here,
Scott. And also Juno District Ranger Brad Orr. Welcome, Brad.
Hello, Scott.
How are you two doing today?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Happy Friday.
You too.
All right, so we got some fun stuff to talk about today, the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act.
Yeah, that was actually the third of Wednesday, but we don't have first Wednesdays yet, so we'll celebrate it on first Friday. But
right.
The Wilderness Act was passed in 1964, and so this year marks its 50th birthday, 50th anniversary.
Why is the Wilderness Act a big deal? Why was it written in the first place?
That's a great question. I think it's a big deal because it's possibly the most progressive law ever passed in our country's history. In 1964, it was passed because though we had areas that were national forests or national parks, we were still adulterating them, if you will, by putting in roads, restaurants, gift shops, hotels and parks, or in the Forest Services side, we'd be kind of expanding the domain for grazing and mining and timber harvest. And people recognize that we need to actually preserve our wild heritage, and if we're going to do that, we need a higher designation. And so when the Wilderness Act was passed in 1964, its intent was to secure for present and future generations this enduring resource of wilderness, kind of preserving our remnant wild places.
when you're talking about the adulteration of wild places. Sorry, I started to smile because I was just thinking of Ed Abbey and how, and we're going to get to some literature and stuff in in a few minutes here, but how he would have been rolling over in his grave hearing those things, those words.
Oh, yes. He really brought the changes we were taking into wild places. He brought that very much to the foremost of our consciousness.
Okay, I want to get back to the Wilderness Act in just a second. You guys both work for the Forest Service. You're a district ranger, Brad Orr. Can you give us a bit of an outline or let us know about the Forest Service's presence here in Juneau, for example?
Sure. Well, of course, wilderness is but one very, very important resource that the Forest Service manages. The Forest Service was created as a multiple-use agency, and therefore we manage a lot of resources for the production of a lot of goods and services. I'm sure the audience is quite aware that we have timber harvesting, and we provide wildlife habitat. We provide many, many different forms of outdoor recreation, usually working through concessionaires, and we take care of watersheds. So my job as the district ranger is to oversee and manage the whole spectrum of resources that we manage and provide. The Juneau Ranger District is actually just one of 10 districts on the Tongass National Forest, and we're located here in Juneau, of course. The other office that's here in Juneau is the regional office for the whole Alaska region, which consists of both the Tongass and the Chugach National Forest. Our headquarters is actually in Ketchikan, so it's a little confusing, but just understand that we have both the regional office and the district office right here in Juneau.
Okay. Okay. Wilderness. We are completely surrounded by wilderness. Why do you think it's important that we're able to access it? Why is it important to the nature of Southeast Alaska, if you will, both people and wildlife-wise?
Now, that's a great question. And there's really two kind of tracks you can take in answering it. One would be sort of a biocentric perspective, that these wild places have a value that's intrinsic to themselves. So there's a value in upholding biodiversity and clean air and water, and that we perpetuate these salmon runs that we're so fortunate to have, and these incredible bears, eagles, and old growth trees, and the mighty glaciers. And all those, John Muir was perhaps one of the more eloquent spokesmen for those things, and saying that they have a worth for themselves. And I think, as Wallace Stegner once said, you know, something, we'd lose something terrible where we'd let it all go.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also an kind of anthropocentric perspective that, I mean, frankly, wilderness sustains a lot of livelihoods, not only economically, but sort of spiritually and culturally. A lot of people live here because they connect so intimately with the outdoors, whether that's you're a fisherman, fisherwoman, or whether you're a outfitter guide, whether you're just someone who likes to go out and hike or take your dog out or go out with your family. And so it's for all of these reasons, I think, that it's so important to protect wilderness.
Okay, good answer, Kevin. Thank you. Thinking of these natural spaces and some of the districts you were just talking about, Brad, tell us a little bit more about the Tongass. Tell us how big it is, what we're looking at here.
Well, the Tongass itself is about 17 million acres. It's the largest national forest by far in the country. And I don't know if most people realize, but about a third of the Tongass National Forest is congressionally designated wilderness. In fact, we have 19 wilderness areas on the Tongass, ranging from fairly small to huge, the smallest being the Morrell Islands, is that how it's pronounced, Morrell Islands, wilderness at 5,000 acres, to the very largest, the Misty Fjords, at 2,142,000 acres, bigger than many national forests, that one wilderness area. The Juneau District happens to have the third largest wilderness area, the Tracy Arm Ford's Terror Wilderness at over 600,000 acres.
And when the Forest Service designates something as a wilderness area, what does that mean exactly on that piece of land? What are some of the restrictions or allowances?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question. But just if I can make a minor correction, it would be Congress that would designate wilderness. So that's it takes an actual law signed by passed by Congress and signed by the law. And so when wilderness is passed, there's kind of two things that come into play. There are certain qualities that we try to uphold, and so those qualities are that it's a natural place. You have high air quality, really good water quality. You don't have too many invasive species. It's also an untrammeled place, which is a very interesting and sort of archaic word that the chief draftsman, Howard Zonizer, insisted be part of the law. And what untrammeled means is it's a place where we actually kind of stand back and exercise restraint. We're going to let nature exercise her own dynamics, and that will determine whether things live or die and what kind of things unfold. But there are also some checks placed on ourselves, and those would be the prohibitions. And typically those are that we're not going to put any permanent roads in wilderness. We're not going to you can only allow an installation, a structure, or some mechanized, motorized use typically if it's essential to upholding the wildness of the place. Here in Alaska, with the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, though, they recognize that it's a little different up here. We don't have the roaded infrastructure where you can drive to a trailhead and get very easily into all these wildernesses. So they made some allowances for like traditional conveyance, like float planes and motorboats and things like that. So the trade-off is we have a little bit more motorized use, perhaps, but we also have a lot fewer roads.
Okay. Thinking about some of our local recreation and wilderness areas, what are a couple of your personal favorites, if I may ask? You want to go first, Brad?
Well, I can only claim to have one favorite because it's the only one I've been to, and that would be Tracy Arm. I happened to be there just last weekend. I got to go down with Kevin and the wilderness crew for 5 days, and it was a tremendous experience. Saw a lot of great management activities that Kevin's crew undertakes on a daily basis when they're down there. So that has to be my new favorite. And as I get a chance to visit some of the others in the area, we'll see.
Sounds good. Yeah, you have a lot of adventures ahead of you, I think. Kevin, how about you?
I don't know I could say I have a favorite. There are four wilderness areas kind of right around Juneau. You've got the Tracy Arm Ford's Terrewonne, with these incredible glacial sculpted fjords, and it's where John Muir is, you know, you're following in his footsteps, and it's incredible splendor. And then just adjoining it is the Chuck River Wilderness, which is an interesting one. It's one of the more recent designations in 1990, and it was designated in part to preserve old growth forest. There's kind of a reaction or a concern that we were losing too much of that here, and it's actually got an interesting history of having had, like, Alaska's first brewery was in there, and now it's wilderness.
Yeah.
And
wow.
While you may lament the loss of a brewery, of course, you can also appreciate the rewilding potential of nature as well. So it's got an interesting story. Almost all of Admiralty Island, except for the Mansfield Peninsula and a few other places like around Angoon and a few other spots, is part of the Kootsnuwu Wilderness. And it's got a multiple stack of designations. It's such an amazing place. It's a Tongass National Forest. It's also a national monument. It's also designated wilderness. And on top of that, it's also a UN-designated biosphere reserve. And so it's the largest intact tract of temperate rainforest remaining on Earth, Admiralty Island is. And then the last one we have is this place called Endicott River Wilderness, which one of our wilderness rangers, Sean Riley, was just telling us about a trip he and several others took up there last week. And it's in the heart of the Chilkat Mountains. And so if you're ever driving up the road and you kind of look across Lynn Canal, you see these violent kind of mountains that are just shooting into the sky. There's this place that's protected in there called the Endicott River Wilderness, and it's one of the most difficult to get to and a fantastic place to find solitude.
Okay. So certainly we can go visit some of these places either by float plane or by hiking or by skiff. But what are some other ways that we can celebrate wilderness here in Juneau? I understand you guys have a pretty cool event coming up tonight.
Yeah, tonight we're going to, after First Friday's kind of transitioning into the evening hours at 7 o'clock from about 7 to 9 at the back room at the Silver Bow Inn, we're going to have an event called Wild Reads. And this is just a celebration of wilderness and writing. And I encourage everyone to come down and participate or listen. You just bring a favorite quote or poem or passage from a book, and I'll just have a little sign-up sheet, and people can have up to 3 minutes to read, or less if they don't need so much. And we're just going to share good literature and really enjoy wilderness, because I think the connection with wilderness, you don't have to always be in wilderness to have it. That obviously is very powerful and important, but a lot of the people who have actually who appreciate wilderness and value it are often those who are coming from urban areas, because they recognize kind of that we need to have something that balances the urban existence.
Yeah. Going back to what you're saying about the anthropocentric view of wilderness, there's something about it too, just knowing that it's around you. I think a lot of people in Juneau might agree with that. Just knowing that we're surrounded by wilderness has some sort of calming effect, I think, on some people anyway.
That's real interesting, because every 10 years, the Forest Service does this very extensive survey of Americans, and it's usually about 5,000 from all quarters. So I've done it in 1990, 2000, 2010. And what's interesting is part of the questions in there, it's a survey on recreation and public lands. And one of the questions is, how do you value wilderness? And when the people list the reasons they value wilderness, for every time they've done it, the top nine or so values haven't required you to actually go to wilderness. Huh. So it's things like preserving biodiversity, or leaving a legacy for my children, or having a place for endangered species, or for spiritual inspiration, just knowing that it's there, that we're doing something right. It's really interesting, these values. And it's only when you get to number 9 or 10 do they actually say, so I can go recreate there or hunt there or fish there.
Sure, sure. Okay, so tonight is 7 to 9 at the Silver Bow, the back room there. You have a couple more of these coming up, though, don't you?
Yeah, so since the 50th anniversary is pretty much all of 2014, we have a few more events coming up. There will be another event called Wild Shots, and that's the 27th of September. It's a Saturday, also at the back room at the Silver Bow Inn, and that'll be from 7 to 9. And for that, I will be putting out a call for people to send me photos of a wilderness excursion. It could just be landscape or wildlife, or it could be a funny experience or something people are doing. And we're just going to have sort of a community slideshow where I'll put them all in together into a presentation.
I bet you'll get plenty of submissions for that.
I hope so, yeah. No, I encourage people to do that. And I look forward to having a great show. And then the next event is on the 3rd of October. It's another First Friday event, and that will be with the there's some folks who undertook an incredible journey from the Brooks Range all the way down to the Arctic Ocean, traveling over 300 miles, taking several weeks to do so, and they're going to come and relate their story and just show some great photos and talk about their wilderness experiences.
All right. Sound like some fine events. Anything else? I want you to go out. You said you brought a quote for me, right?
I brought quite a few, but, I'll just...
I want to go out on that. Before we get to that, though, anything else either of you would like to add?
No, other than to thank the radio station for allowing us to come in and share our passion for wilderness with the public, and hope that interested people participate in these events that Kevin has talked about, and give us your thoughts and your ideas about wilderness management. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Juneau District Ranger Brad Orr speaking there. And Kevin, you're going to take us out on something here?
Yeah, here's just a nice quote from the nature writer Louise Dickinson Rich. She says, "For there are some people who can live without wild things about them and the earth beneath their feet, and some who cannot. To those of us who, in a city, are always aware of the abused and abased earth below the pavement, walking on the grass, watching the flight of birds, or finding the first spring dandelion, are the rights as old and unalienable as the rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We belong to no cult. We are not nature lovers. We don't love nature any more than we love breathing. Nature is simply something indispensable, like air and light and water, that we accept as necessary to living, and the nearer we can get to it, the happier we are.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen. For more of that, 7 to 9 tonight at the Silver Bow. Thanks, guys.
Thank you,
thanks,
Scott.
Once upon a time, some time ago back on the East Coast, in New York City to be exact, a bunch of artists and painters and sculptors and musicians and poets and writers and actors and dancers and architects all started feeling real superior to their ego counterparts out on the West Coast. So they all got together and decided they would show those snotty surfer upstarts a thing or two about the Big Apple, and they hired themselves a truck. It was a big, spanking, new, white, shiny, chrome-plated cab over Peterbilt with mud flaps, stereo, TV, AM and FM radio, leather seats, and a Naugahyde sleeper, all fresh with new American flag decals and art arc printed on the side of the door with solid 24-karat gold leaf type. And they filled up this truck with the most significant piles and influential heaps of artwork to ever be assembled in modern times, and sent it west to chide, cajole, humble, and humiliate the Golden Bear. And this is the true story of that truck. Every truckload of art from New York City came a-rolling down the road, while the driver was singing and sunset was pretty, but the truck turned over and she rolled off the road. Yeah, the truckload of art, it's burning near the highway, precious optics are scattered all over the ground, and it's a terrible sight if a person were to see it, but there weren't nobody around.
Tuning in to a Juno afternoon here on Friday, September 5th, 2014. A little Terry Allen right here in celebration of First Friday. If you want to figure out what's going on in the community tonight, you can go to firstfriday.ktoo.org and take a look at our art guide. There's some fun stuff, some neat work on display downtown tonight for the September 1st Friday event. And as always, tune in to a Juno Afternoon on Monday. See, that'd be the 6th, 7th, 8th, same time, same place, 104.3 KTOO FM. The weather looks like some rain through the weekend, unfortunately. Saturday, patchy fog in the morning, rain, highs around 56, southeast winds to 10. Sunday, rain, highs around 56, southeast winds to 10. And Monday, let's see, mostly cloudy, highs around 57, so maybe a little bit less rain going into early next week. Tuesday, same thing, mostly cloudy, highs around 57. Wednesday, cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 57. And I don't see the rain word until Thursday-ish.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And stay tuned for All Things Considered in about 10 seconds.